Okay, always one of our favorite segments, Off the Record, On the Record, with Mr. Campo. Does a great blog, folks. Great blog. Check it all out. And the epiphany came about a long time ago. Well, you know what? Let's put some of those thoughts on the show. So Off the Record now becomes On the Record, the managing partner of the fantastic firm Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. Joseph Nicholas Campolo, ladies and gentlemen. Sir, how are you?
Hey, Jay. Opening day. Opening day, man. How you feel about the Mets this year?
I don't. You know how I feel about the Mets? I'll tell you. Last night, 8-2 in the loss, and I'm looking at their lineup. And, Joe, I got to tell you, I don't know why everybody's going gaga over this team. First off, their pitching is in such need right now. If you get past Jake DeGrom, who do you got? Stroman? David Peterson, look what happened last night. Taijuan Walker goes today. You're in trouble. Cookie Carrasco, who knows when he'll be back. And Syndergaard, you know, you're still a couple of months out. So, in essence, that's your pitching. The bullpen is very suspect. Look what happened the other day there. And then you get to the lineup, and you listen, if you're not playing Dominic Smith on a daily basis, you're out of your mind, Louis Rojas. You got to play him. He's the best hitter. I mean, Pete Alonso, who knows? You know, I'd say there's some trouble here, and Frankie Lindor, I know, is going to hit, but he's been a little slow out of the gate. So, Joe, as I sum it up, what do I think about the New York Mets? What do you think?
Yeah, Jay, you know, I think there's going to need some trades. I think you're right. I hate to admit it. It's probably the first season where you and I agree on the future of the Mets. But I think the trades are going to be needed. But you know, we'll keep moving forward and see how it all shakes out. I'm always an optimist with them. I don't know why, but I always am. And so we'll see how it all shakes out for sure.
The Yankees, I'm holding my breath too, because yeah, Aaron Judge now. What else is new? He's got some soreness on the left side. So what is that? I mean, come on. You know, this is why you cannot commit to guys to give them a zillion dollars. Because when you're out every year on the injured list, you know what? Come on. Stay healthy. You know, it's just, it's mind-boggling. But we'll wait and see. Hopefully it's nothing crazy. Hey, good to have you as always, my friend. So, you know, I'm going to insert for our first point of discussion the guy we just had on who made an announcement within the hour, that he has thrown his hat into the gubernatorial ring. Now, listen, we all kind of expected it. I've had a number of conversations with Lee Zeldin. He did a lot of research. He got the go-ahead from family members in and around. Did a lot of listen, he's a smart guy. You're not going to run unless you check it all out. But he's running. And quite frankly, Joe, I think the timing has never been better. With all that is happening in and around Albany these days, just a few things, right? It's there for the taking. I think it could be. Lee Zeldin has made it official. He is running for governor November 8, 2022. Could be a very big day for he and his family members. What do you think?
I think it's great. You know, I think, thank God, that that somebody's going to run for governor in the state of New York. That's pro business. You know, I'm unabashedly a supporter of Lee's. I have supported him since he first decided to run for the New York State Albany, because he made a commitment to Long Island businesses and he's kept his word. And you know, people in this country are really strange sometimes when it comes to voting. You know, they'd rather vote for somebody they may like, who has, you know, who has failed social policies in mind, versus someone they may dislike that has great social policies. And I think we saw that with President Trump. And so now they're trying to align Lee with Donald Trump. And I say that's nonsense. You know, I've gotten to know Lee, we're friends, and I've supported him throughout all of his campaigns because he delivers. He delivers for Long Island. He delivers for Long Island businesses. And you know what, Jay? This state is in terrible shape. Even everybody in Albany will agree we're in terrible shape, and it's only going to get worse. Mass migrations of businesses, I was reading in the Wall Street Journal that New York has the largest amount of small businesses that have left since COVID and aren't coming back. And, you know, where do people think the money comes from? You know, my parents used to say to me when I would say, you know, when I was younger and say, I want a new baseball mitt or something, they'd say, where do you think the money comes from? You think I got a tree out back and I'm going to go pick the dollar bills off the tree? Well, people in New York need to understand that same concept. Where do they think the money comes from? And for so long in New York here, we've just had a failed economic policy. So all I'm focused on is the economic policy that we've had. You know, you can't take the top growers in this country, the people that are growing the economy, and set them on a downward trajectory while you're taking the bottom earners and just setting them on an upward trajectory. I think everybody should be on an upward trajectory. I'm totally in favor of making sure that as the top earners grow, which are growing the pie and the economy, the bottom is getting a more fair share. I'm totally in favor of that. But what we've done in this state systematically over the last 10 years is we've taken the bottom sector of society and given them an upward trend. Totally in favor of that whatsoever. And we've taken the top earners in society and put them on a downward trend for no reason. There's no reason to do that. It's just failed policies from an economic perspective. It's not understanding how basic economics works. You know, Jeff Bezos from Amazon, who's worth $100 billion, was asked, and he answered the problem with his answer to this question, which was perfect. You know, and a reporter asked him if he felt bad that he has $100 billion in this world where there's so much pain, and he said no. He said, because I created $1 trillion worth of wealth for all the investors. I only have 10% of it. The other 90% of it was distributed out to the other investors. And that's exactly the point, is, you know, failed economic policy would just look at him and say, he's worth $100 billion, take his money away from him, without realizing that he created $900 billion worth of wealth for other folks. And good policy says, Jeff Bezos, keep running, keep earning, and we're going to figure out how to take that additional $900 billion that you've created and make sure it's fairly apportioned without having to have the lead horse stop running and building all of that wealth and all of that growth for everybody else. And here in New York, we just haven't done that. You know, we haven't done that. I understand that there are a lot of social challenges that needed to be addressed. I understand that. I don't agree with them all, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm willing to pay my taxes to elected officials to try and make sure that all areas of the society get served. I'm willing to do that. But you can't keep taking from the top earners who are growing the pie, because then the pie starts to contract. And Lee has always been a straight shooter. He has always been a full supporter of business. When I first met the guy, I was leading a lawsuit against the state for the MTA payroll tax. If you remember the MTA payroll tax, Jay, we were in 2008-2009 crisis, recession, unemployment hits more than 10%, and the state decides that they're going to put a tax on payroll, which was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous, and they did it in an unconstitutional manner. We brought a lawsuit. Lee was running for state senator, and he won on that platform. And when he got to Albany, he did what he promised to do, which was to get them to repeal that tax for most of the businesses. Then in Congress, continued to deliver. He delivered the Electron Ion Collider Project in Brookhaven National Lab out there. It's going to bring $1.5 billion in necessary infrastructure spending here to Long Island, which is incredible. When COVID hit, Lee called me and Terry Leffi-Maselli from the HIA. The Hot Frog Industrial Park is not even in his district, but he called us saying, we need to make sure the businesses in the park are protected. What can I do to help? Lee worked with Stony Brook University to make sure that they were getting PPE that they needed coming out of the park. He worked with County Executive Ballone and Secretary Mnuchin in a great deal to make sure we got necessary $350 million the county needed. He's been nothing but business friendly, okay, which is exactly what we need in New York. We can't keep heading towards this iceberg the way that we are, and we need somebody that we can trust and who's a straight shooter. You know, and you don't have to agree with every single thing that an elected official's position is. Nobody's a perfect candidate. But what we do need is somebody who understands how to support businesses, how to keep them growing, how to keep them here in the state, without letting the middle class and the lower class fall far behind. It can be done. It can be done with basic economic, good, sensible principles. That's what I think Lee brings to the table, and that's why he has my full support for governor.
And listen, I agree with pretty much everything you said. You know, I mean, and I have said this throughout. If Lee Zeldin was not in the position he was in, Joe, I don't know where this county would be, Suffolk. He has secured dollars that you normally wouldn't secure, and he's done that because of the relationships that he carved in Washington. And I'm talking the likes of a Steve Mnuchin, the one-time Secretary of the Treasury, Jared Kushner, son-in-law of the president. I mean, listen, it is fact. The county would not be entitled to certain funds if he did not have those inroads. So, and listen, I've had Steve Malone on this program many a time, as you know, and he also has lauded the efforts of Lee Zeldin. And, you know, it's not like a partisan thing. It's a bipartisan thing. He has done more for Suffolk County than anyone else during this pandemic. I mean, that is a fact. And let's face it, and let's be honest, the governor has been on a spiral downward for a long time now, okay? Now, you want to applaud him for the efforts of so-called flattening the curve, okay, and everything else? Well, what has gone right for him? I mean, even policies from way back failed. And I talk about the – I could give you a half an hour of failed policies, one of which the $60 to $70 million invested into marketing the state to lure businesses, a complete failure, hardly any answer to call. Who wants to set up shop here? For crying out loud, with the taxes and everything else. And by the way, this $18 billion increase and everything else, and that's going to go to the corporations and the high earners and the millionaires and the billionaires. That's great. But don't think anybody else will be immune. Not the case. It'll be a trickle-down effect. Everybody knows that. So everybody is in line right now for this stuff. Listen, the book that came out in October, Bad Decision. The situation in and around with the nursing homes and, of course, now the latest report of tracking and everything else that this administration did when they said they didn't and the changing of the numbers, that is a disaster. All of these allegations of sexual harassment, including the one that came out yesterday, scathing details to the Albany Times Union paper, summoning to the office and everything else that went on behind closed doors. Listen, complete disaster right now, okay? Impeachment probes ongoing here. Listen, right now, this governor is in big-time trouble, and it's for the taking. And Lee Zeldin has a chance for that taking right now. I don't think it's ever been more present for somebody to take this post. And listen, I was kidding Lee before. I said, listen, you're going to sit in the executive chamber in November 2022, and guess what? You're going to have less people to govern. Why? Because people can't afford to live here anymore. That's fact. I mean, they're taxed out of their mind. People can't afford it anymore, Joe. So, in essence, it's there. You know, you could throw Giuliani Jr. out there. You could throw Mark Molinaro out there, who did absolutely nothing. You want to put in a Rob Astorino? Forget it. Lee Zeldin's the guy. And I'll tell you, I don't know if he will oppose Andrew Cuomo. I'm going to be honest with you. Because, quite frankly, I don't think Cuomo will run with all that's going on right now. I mean, he could be ousted. But, in essence, that's a wait and see. It has never been more clear as far as Zeldin to run for this post. And the only thing I said to him, you know, and we know there are pockets of blue here. And let's face it. The fact is, Biden won New York. Big margin. Okay, that's a fact. He's going to have to get in and around the city. There are pockets of blue. He's going to have to overturn. Listen, it's not out of the realm. George Pataki, anybody remember him? Okay, so it's very real. I think he will do fine. He will have a very good road there. He's going to work hard. You and I both know him well from state senate days and beyond. He has done a tremendous job. And listen, the world's his oyster right now as far as the state. So, you know, a wait-and-see approach. But, you know, we knew it was going to happen. You know, there was a couple of questions here and there. But very interesting in the next couple of months, Joe. Very interesting stuff. So
yeah, and listen, Lee's a really smart guy, Jay, and you know, my advice to him, and I know he gets this, and is, who cares about Andrew Cuomo? Andrew Cuomo's Andrew Cuomo. We need to focus on the state of New York and making it great, getting these businesses back to be the shining star in this country. It is absolutely so painful and so hurtful to see all of these businesses leaving. And how are we going to pay for everything? And really, Jay, the message, the drumbeat really needs to be, you know, building this back. We used to be the lead state in the nation on everything, and we're not anymore. We've fallen just so far behind, but we can do it. We can do it. New Yorkers have this real, you know, in the Marine Corps, they call it an esprit de corps when it comes to talking about the Marine Corps. Anytime a Marine talks about it, they just gush up with this esprit de corps. And New Yorkers, you know, have that, but it's gone away. It's gone away. We need some wins. We need some really, you know, great stuff going on here in New York. We need some excitement. And to do that, you got to be able to pay for it. See, that's the part that everybody wants to talk about, is how are we paying for it? And it's okay if you want the businesses to pay the bill, okay? But stop making it business unfriendly then. It's insane to me. Right? If the model is the businesses are going to pay for the bill, then why would we limit what the businesses can make? Because the more they make, the more taxes they will spend. Why would we drive businesses out of the state if our entire plan is to have the businesses pay the taxes? We would want to encourage as many businesses as possible to be here so we could pay for these social plans and this infrastructure. It's been insanity to me this last 10 years at what the economic plan has been. We're going to have businesses pay for everything, but we're going to make them leave the state. It's crazy. We want as many as we can here. I'm a business owner. I'm happy to pay my taxes as long as we're making progress. It's just insanity. So I'm hoping this campaign is not going to be about Andrew Cuomo and his failures. This campaign is going to be about a new tomorrow for New York that becomes a business-friendly state where we can then have resources to start talking about how to fix our problems. We can lament all we want about the problems in New York, but if we don't have money to fix it, we have problems. And if we don't have businesses to generate that money, we have problems. So I'm super excited that at least the dialogue is going to be, for the first time in 10 years, how can we start fixing this state and attracting businesses back to it? That's the super excitement that I have.
You're not going to fill those holes by legalizing recreational marijuana. You're not going to do it, Joe. I don't care what kind of revenue you're thinking about, $350 million plus. The ramifications and everything else, to me, are still very cloudy. This could be an absolute disaster. If you look at the other states, they have gone through thick and thin as far as what could happen with cannabis on the road, for instance. I think about employers, construction employers, especially scaffold laws and everything else, what could happen with accidents. It's not the right time. There's no question. Timing is everything, and it's not the right time to pass marijuana bills. You can't do it. I'm sorry. We are already in a crisis as far as this pandemic. We're still not out of the woods yet. Many people with depression and alcoholism and drugs and fentanyl that's been in and around. Now you have the border stuff going on with drugs going through like Swiss cheese. In essence, a very poorly timed maneuver in Albany as far as the passage of this thing. It's all about dollar signs because we can't balance anything up there. We can't balance a checkbook. So in essence, let's streamline some freebies here and let's get high, baby, because that's what's going on right now in Albany. Okay? That's what's happening. It was a poor decision. A guy, by the way, who was an opponent way back is now for it because they don't know how to balance anything up there. I'll tell you, we knew it was coming, and I talked to a lot of people, Joe, on this stuff. It is not the right thing to do. not the right thing. You put so much emphasis now on law enforcement and everything else. All these devices they talk about that'll detect as if you have a breathalyzer in place, something similar, not there yet. Loads of issues regarding this stuff, Joe. Loads of issues.
Well, that's the point, Jay. You have now exactly seen the point that when you spend a decade not focused on how to grow the pie by incentivizing businesses, healthy businesses, to be here and grow, you now have no options. You have no options, no good options on how to generate revenue, okay? And so now we're down in the dirt. Casinos, recreational marijuana. Those are our best options for generating revenue right now. Rather than having big discussions about how we're attracting huge employers here and incentivizing them to create jobs and give us tax revenue. And that's exactly the point, is that's where we have been led to, where we have to pick the best decisions out of the worst choices. This is exactly the problem. And who does that hurt? It hurts the lower class population. More casinos, okay, more legalized drugs, hurts the lower class population, not the upper class population. And so it's this vicious cycle of failed policy from an economic perspective. Honestly, Jay, in a very hypothetical world, to me, I don't care if somebody wants to sit in their house and smoke pot. It doesn't matter to me. But what matters to me is how the state got to this place where that's its best option. And like you said, it's $350 million. That does nothing for our budget, but it's our best option of how to get money out of this state. It's insane to me that those are the discussions we're having. New York State with New York City with Wall Street here, and we're down to casinos and marijuana are our best bet. It's disgraceful that we've gotten to this place where we are, that those are our best bets. We should be having discussions, and this is, again, where I'm hopeful the discussion's going to go for the next 2 years. We should be having discussions about how to grow the state's economy back so we're not just limited with these very, very narrow decisions that are going to disproportionately hurt the lower classes in the state.
I'm doing this a long time in this business, as you know. I have never been more disgusted as far as how New York's being handled right now. And I mean that 100%. I've never had more of a low of what I'm seeing and reporting than what's happening within the state right now. It's never been this bad. The state Democrats ought to be ashamed of themselves in so many fronts. And it's just a pandering to the movement. It's been happening. It's the AOC effect. I've been saying this all along. It's disgraceful. It really is. It's brainwashed many a folk up there who at least had a moderate way of thinking that is no more. And quite frankly, I don't know. I just don't know if the state can rebound. I'm not kidding when I say this. I don't know. Now, if Lee gets the post, there's a chance because he's going to turn it around. I know he will if he gets his chance with his way of thinking, as I have known him for a long time. But right now, I have never seen the state at a lower point. And that's a fact on so many fronts. And I could go in for another 2 hours on this, okay? But because of time, we'll move on. But Joe, I'll give you a final thought on that. And maybe I'm taking it a little bit overboard in my thinking. I don't think I am, because I try and look at things objectively on all fronts. And I'm not liking at all what I'm seeing here. On all fronts. On all fronts, Joe. It's an absolute disgrace what is happening to this great state, this great city, the bail reform, the police, the way our city has been run by this buffoon in New York City, who also is at the end of his term, thank goodness, very soon. You know, we need change here. We need desperate change. If any time change isn't needed, it's right now. That's the only way I see this state turning it around. Change. So needed. Never more so as we speak, sir.
Totally agree, Jay. Again, I hope you know, but we can't get out of our own way with sensationalism. But I hope that this this campaign, you know, Lee's campaign, and I hope everybody else that throws their hat in the ring for New York State Governor, the discussion of the campaign is how are we building this state back to be business friendly, to get our economy going again, and to have good, viable economic solutions here on the table in New York. We have none. We have no economic plan. And you know what's funny is we would be having an even more dire conversation if in the Georgia Senate runoff there had been one Republican that had won, because if the Republicans controlled the Senate, New York would not have gotten as much money in federal bailout dollars as possible, and we'd be in a much worse place. And how terrible a position was that, that people in New York don't even realize how high the stakes were? How terrible a position is that, that one more Republican senator and this state would have been decimated? So how did we get there is not something I care about right now. It's how are we fixing it? Because Jay, if we can't fix this, and look, I'm 53. You know, it's Florida looks like a very good viable option, to be honest with you. Low taxes, easy lifestyle, lots of golf. And why keep fighting the fight if you're just banging your head up against the wall? So this is a really important election coming up for the and it could, listen, Lee's a great candidate. I fully support Lee. He's the guy. If there are going to be other candidates out there that are going to be talking about reasonable economic solutions and not just wanting to talk about why they should vote for them instead of Andrew Cuomo, we should be talking to them. We should be getting as many good economic solutions to the state as possible. But if we let this opportunity pass, and Lee's the right guy to lead us through this, if we let this opportunity pass and we just go back to business as usual here in New York, this state's toast for a very long time.
You know, Joe, you brought up a great point with Florida. I'm going to have to check that out myself, by the way. But in essence, you know, I was just thinking of something. And I know his name was out there. It's not out of the realm, folks. But fast forward, November 2022, Lee Zeldin versus Steve Ballone. Okay? How about that? Okay? How about that? Little Ollie Frazier coming into politics. Not out of the realm, Joseph. Not out of the realm, sir. Keep that in mind. That could be interesting stuff. All right, let's move on. The great Joe Campolo with me. Joe, we're going to go right through here. The Chauvin trial. I thought the defense got in a few punches yesterday. You know, the videotape, although, you know, it's interesting. You can play all kinds of games with audio and everything else. When you hear Floyd said, I ate the drugs. Of course, when they played the entire tape as the prosecution star, it was a little more than that, that went via the other side. And he couldn't breathe. And that was the key point of that whole thing with the audio. But you're in the second week, 8 days already complete as far as testimony. What have been your observations? Is it slam dunk? Remember now, you need 12 and 12, right? You need 12 points of view to agree with the 12 present as far as Joe. All it takes is one to negate everything here. What's the Campolo assessment so far?
Well, I thought the prosecution did a terrific job, right? They dotted their I's and they crossed their T's. And remember, what's at stake here is whether it's going to be a murder conviction or it's going to be manslaughter. I don't see anybody. And let's back up one second. It's just such an important time in American history, from so many perspectives. You know, from the black community's perspective, I totally get it. I totally understand and sympathize, because honestly. Honestly, Jay, I think in all of our hearts and all of our minds, we can answer the question that if George Floyd was white, would that cop have knelt on him for 9 minutes or not? And that's the question that has to be answered, right? From a black community's perspective, and I get it, that if that was a white person, he wouldn't have knelt on him for 9 minutes. And the person would probably still be alive. From a white perspective, right, it's just a system. The entire system is a system that's broken and needs to be looked at. I call it systemic indifference. I mean, here we have police officers, okay, that are assigned to inner cities where there's a lot of violence and drugs, and they just get totally burnt out. They just get totally, completely burnt out of the whole humanity of the system. You know, it's that whole Fort Apache, the Bronx, if you remember that movie from the 70s, and I think we're seeing it. You know, we're seeing it again, and they're indifferent. They become indifferent to humans, okay, and it becomes, you know, disproportionately minority communities that this happens with. And we can't have a system whereby men and women that are given weapons to, you know, keep law and order and peace are systemically burnt out and indifference towards human beings. It's the whole thing needs to be looked at, and I think that's the poignancy of this trial. And what's at stake here is we need to address it from all perspectives. You know, that said, I can't imagine just based on the videotape. I mean, just based on the videotape, that there's not criminal behavior. The question is going to be, is it murder or manslaughter? And that's probably why a deal was never cut in this. I can imagine the defense team must have pushed the prosecutors really hard to make it manslaughter. Manslaughter being, you know, criminally negligent, more negligent. Murder being intent, right? There is an intent element to murder. And I'm sure a prosecutor said, I'm not taking that hot potato. Let a jury decide if this was negligent behavior or this was intentional behavior. And we'll see what a jury decides in that regard, you know, because it's going to take a unanimous decision to decide whether this was him intending to murder somebody or this was him just being negligent and indifferent at that particular moment. But, you know, it's an opportunity for us all to realize that this whole process needs to change. Again, there's never just one side to any story. From the black community, I totally get it, and I totally get that poignant question. But from law enforcement's perspective, you know, what do we expect? You know, we talk a lot about in Suffolk County, they talk a lot about how high the police department is paid and blah 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 blah. But in these inner cities, These police officers are not paid huge salaries, and they're under incredibly stressful conditions, and they're tasked with protecting our lives, strangers' lives, and they get burnt. And what are we doing? How are we changing that whole system so that there is not this indifference towards humans and towards social conditions? And what are the approaches going to be? And how are we managing all that? And if we don't take this moment to address all of those issues, It's a complete wasted time in our history. So I think this trial has a lot of ramifications and implications about how we need to do things better across the board moving forward.
Joe, I agree. And you know, if I'm on the prosecution, I got to tell you, I am not assuming anything at this point in time. Because again, it takes one of the 12. To turn, okay? And again, it comes down to the word intent. That's the key here. And you know how tricky it could get regarding juries, especially when it comes to cops. You know, there's always a softness that could be for someone, you know, who could be on the side of saying, okay, well, you know, he was a cop the whole thing. Listen, a lot has been made and whatnot. You're going to have a lot more of the physicality makeup of George Floyd. Internally, heart condition. That's still more to come on that. The fentanyl, the drug, whatever it is. Listen, that is going to be brought into play as far as the cause of the man's death. But the biggest aspect I still think to come, Joe, that nobody is talking about is a history. There is a history here prior to May 25th last year of Chauvin and Floyd, because they were both bouncers at a club. did not see it eye to eye. From what we hear, now that's a story that I think can be accentuated a little bit more in this trial. But that could come into play, and that's why I say if you are the prosecution, you are not going to let your guard down at all here. You're going to keep your foot in the pedal and everything else because it seems right and everything as far as how it's progressing. But you know what? I am not letting up one iota, and I might bring in club owners back in the day when those two were present. And it's an eye to eye in a few from what I read. Okay, hasn't been brought up yet. Hasn't been even been brought up prior to the trial. So that could be something that could be put into play here, but without question, it's going to be a fascinating situation down the stretch. Now, listen, the big question is, if Chauvin gets convicted, not of the murder charges, of the manslaughter, okay, would, in your estimation, that set off situations in and around Minneapolis and around the country as far as the hammer not being thrown completely by Derek Chauvin's way? If he gets on the manslaughter charge, how much unrest do you think we could have in this country? Now, listen, I think a lot of people are banking on murder here, Joe. They're banking on the murder, was it a third degree and a second, right?
Yep.
In essence, if not that way down those roads and it goes by way of manslaughter, what are you sensing here?
I'm sensing that anything short of a murder conviction is going to be looked at by the black community as injustice, because it would be. From the black community's perspective, anything less than murder is a white man getting off again. A black man's life not being as valuable as a white man. And that's the perspective behind Black Lives Matter. And you know why I supported, everybody got crazy about the term Black Lives Matter and wanted to argue that all lives matter. And the point of history that we're at right now, and the reason why the words Black Lives Matter became important, is because for so long in American history, black lives didn't matter. Okay, and so by just saying Black Lives Matter, we're now saying black lives matter as much as white lives. Okay, and the point is, that's why I asked the initial question, right, for us white Americans to answer deep in our hearts, is do we truly believe if George Floyd was white, that he would have been treated that way? And if the answer in any way, shape, or form in your heart is no, he probably wouldn't have, then now you understand why the black community is outraged and why they want a murder conviction. The challenge is, right, and this is where the defense and how skilled these lawyers are will be interesting. The challenge is, from a purely legal perspective, so if the defense plays for an acquittal, they're gonna blow this whole case wide open and look ridiculous, because you can't put George Floyd on trial. George Floyd is not on trial. George Floyd is dead by the actions of this police officer. It's the police officer that's on trial. However, you know, if I'm the defense attorney, my argument is going to be this. My argument is going to be, how could you say I intentionally murdered this man? I called EMTs twice. Once when he banged his head and had a cut, and then when I realized that he was having trouble breathing, I escalated my call to EMT. So in my mind, the ambulance is coming. And he's a big guy, and he's obviously on drugs. So I'm just going to hang out and hold him tight so this thing doesn't get out of control until the ambulance gets here. Okay? If defense makes that argument, now the jury's got a hot potato, because there are facts to support that argument. And that gets into the systemic indifference just towards people in general, not race, just towards people in general. Here's a cop, he's burnt out, okay? In his mind, he's called an ambulance twice now. He knows that, you know, that situations where people are on drugs can get out of control. So he's just going to hold this guy steady until the ambulance gets there. And it's not his fault that the ambulance took as long as it did. That's going to be the defense's strongest argument for manslaughter. And if that's what the conviction is, then that does not validate the emotions and the feelings of the black community behind the Black Lives Matter movement, and therefore it's not going to be a just conviction in their minds. So it's a really important, interesting position that these 12 people hold for this country. You know, but we have a system based on what juries say. Our system is totally based on us being tried by members of our own community so that the social norms are the same. We'll just have to see how the jury handles it. But I think anything less than murder is going to be offensive and probably should be offensive to the black community.
You know, I remember when that verdict came through with O.J., 95 October, I do believe, everybody was riveted. And you're going to have even more so as far as all eyes upon in the next couple of weeks, without question. And I'll tell you one thing. If this doesn't come through the way a lot of people think it should, the Rodney King situation will be like bomb Bailey's as far as what could happen here. So, you know, you talk about those 12 individuals. Wow. I don't think there has never been more to get this right than ever before in a courtroom in this country. I'll say that. That's how important this thing is going to be in the next couple. You agree with that, Joe? I mean, that's how important this thing is going to be. I'm sure everybody remembers where they were. That not only, you know, the O.J. Chase and Al Cowens, June 94, I'm watching the Knicks and the Rockets. We know the big thing. And all of a sudden, you got the picture within the picture. We also know where we were in October of 95, Joe. And that's going to be kind of a similar deal when this thing is ending.
Jay, all I can say is this jury just has to do what this jury in their hearts believe is the right thing to do. Our country is a nation of laws. That's what it is. And the laws are always finally determined and meted out, and justice is served through a jury. And, you know, I hope and I pray for their strength to get this right. And I hope and I pray that the country is strong enough to endure whatever direction this jury goes in. I don't think the realm of non-acquittal is a possibility here, because the videotape's just too damning. There's no way to say that he wasn't at least negligent. But I think it is an opportunity. This trial is an opportunity, and I was in law school with O.J. Simpson. The O.J. Simpson trial was going on. And I had a very good friend that's still friends with him today, African American, and he and I had a lot of discussions about the implications of that trial, and the point always stuck with me, you know, that if O.J. Simpson was a loved, beloved white celebrity, would it be different? Would the whole thing have been different? And if you just look at it from that lens, you can understand the perspective a little bit better, and it goes back to, you know, if George Floyd was a white man, would he have been treated that way? The other interesting question, Jay, the other interest to ask in all of this is if Derek Chauvin was a black cop who had done it, then I think the discussion would be meted more on the policies of the police department as a whole. Derek Chauvin being who he is and having his past, the focus has to be on, you know, is this a racist cop? And that's what the jury has to decide. Murder conviction equals racist cop. Manslaughter conviction equals systemic indifference and negligence. So a lot at stake in this trial for sure.
You know, I'm looking at the clock. I cannot believe we're almost out of time here. I wanted to attack the Georgia election law, the new laws. We don't have time, you know, because I wanted to get into that with you. I'm gonna have to have you back soon, because you're the guy to talk to about this. With baseball and relocation and camp and all that has occurred. So we're going to have to put that one on ice a little bit. I do want to just get to your great firm, Campolo Middleton McCormick. And Joe, you know, folks, for those who don't know, the firm selected by Forbes, one of the top corporate law firms in the nation. Okay, it's 1%. Think about the law firms. I mean, it is unbelievable. And Joe, you know, I give you a ton of credit for that. It really, it's amazing. It really is. When you think about it, and when, you know, we talk about it a lot, but right now the firm is hiring, right? You go to the website, cmmlp.com. You are hiring for the next stars. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir. We are post-COVID rebuild mode. We are hiring. Visit our website. It's great. And let me just take 10 seconds for a final thought, Jay, because I really want to just get this point across. And that is, you know, America is an idea. As far as a nation goes, we're not boundaries, right? We're an idea of equal protection, equal justice, one nation under God. And that's what I think everybody needs to continue to stay focused on. And as we go through the Derek Chauvin trial and as we go through all these things, we really need to remember and understand that our idea in America is for each generation to be better, to be more inclusive, to be more just, to be more tolerant than the generation beforehand. And so I think we really need to embrace this moment as Americans to understand what's at stake for this country. And irrespective of what this jury decides, we as all Americans need to take it as a moment to become better than we were before it happened.
Yeah. Well said, my friend. Really well said. And you couldn't have said it better, really. There's no question about it. So, folks, Joe, a huge part of the HIA, the Hop Hug Industrial Association of Long Island Innovation Park. We know how important and vital it is as far as the economy is concerned. Think about HIALI as far as the eastern portion of the country and Silicon Valley out in the west. I mean, the two together, if they're humming along, you have something that is very special. Joe's a very big part of it. You can get all the updates. You go to the website, hia-li.org. And by the way, you're going to be moderating, right, the next go-around on the 23rd, sir? Is that what's happening on the update?
Yep, we have great stuff going on inside the park. You know, Jay, it's been a great – that's a whole other area for us to talk about, but really great bipartisan – support for the Long Island Innovation Park at Hop Hog. Everybody recognizes what an incredible economic hub it is and how necessary it is to our region. And so, you know, the amount of collaboration and bipartisan support we've received for the park has been tremendous. So we're going to be having a discussion about that coming up, and I encourage everybody to join it.
It's good stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff to be discussed with all the zoning and everything else and how critical it is for this juncture. Mr. Campolo, as always, very cathartic as far as getting into conversations with you. It really is. And I look forward to the next time, my good friend.
Take care, Jay. We'll talk soon.